lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening.
No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello, we are back. My name's Scott Hughes.
My name's Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. So we're three races into the 2020 season. It's been a bizarrely long wait this year. We're finally into it now. For me, race one was superb. Race two, I thought was, not bad. It was still a good race. I thought this one was the weakest of the three so far. What were your thoughts on the Hungarian Grand Prix?
Yeah, it had lots of weird things occur in it. I mean, first of all, it was the first time both Ferraris have been lapped in a Formula One race since 2008. And we'll talk about Ferrari in more depth in just a bit. It looked as though we were going to have a wet race, but that really didn't throw too much up apart from the first handful of laps. We had the bizarre crash of Max Verstappen on the lap where he was driving to the grid, which is just bizarre. We've seen that in the past, but not very often at all. And the job that the Red Bull mechanics did to fix his car on the grid was just immense. Alex Albon has improved. The Haas team looked as though they'd pulled a blinder by bringing their drivers in to change to dry tyres on the formation lap. And then we find that you're not allowed to do that. The driver can come in off his own accord, but the team can't call him in on the formation lap, a rule I've never heard of.
Yeah, like you say, there were some bizarre kind of rules that came out, and I've never heard of that one either. And after when I'd heard about that penalty, I thought, really? I don't remember that ever being a thing before. Because that's one of the things they can do to spice the race up, isn't it? And, a team like Haas coming in, you think, well, that's actually a great move. And we saw at the start of the race, they were right up there in fourth, fifth, sixth, whatever they were. But it really got them up there at the start of the race. And I thought, what a great idea, what a brilliant move. And then obviously they got punished for it down the line, which is strange, because if you've got teams that are at the back at the moment, we know for a fact that the Alfa Romeos, the Haas, the Ferraris even, they're all struggling at the moment, and even the Williams to an extent. And I think when these cars get up there, it would be nice to see them race and allow them to race and not have to do these penalties. And I know it's got to be equal and it's got to be fair. And I know that you could argue, if you're going to punish Mercedes, you've got to punish, Alfa Romeo the same, for example. But it's frustrating, isn't it, when a team that shouldn't be up there is up there, which makes the racing more exciting for us. Like you say, I think the one thing this race missed for me was a bit of rain. I think if we had a bit of rain, it would have been an absolute barnstormer because all the kind of pieces were there. The puzzle just didn't get quite put together right for me.
Yeah, and Williams again, disappointing race pace that they had. But, qualifying I thought was exciting when Russell pulled it out of the bag, put it third on the grid going into FP3. And also the amazing thing about qualifying, I thought, was just how quickly the track came to the drivers. Within the space of two laps, the times were tumbling all over the place. It was really fascinating to see just how much rubber was going down on the track and how much more grippy it was becoming.
Yeah, and I think, talking of qualifying, just watching the Lewis lap again particularly, but the two Mercedes, they're in a world of their own, aren't they? And it's every year we say this, like, oh, they can't be that good next year. Bearing in mind we've had no real rule changes this year, the other teams, in theory, should catch up. And when you watch these races, you just think, once again, I don't know what Mercedes are doing, but they've blown everybody away again. And that car is incredible. And even, they had the issues on the first race with the sensors that we discussed last week. They go, right, we've got a problem. What is it? How do we deal with it? Let's get it sorted for the next race. And it's done. It's done for the next race. Whatever the issue is, they get together, they work it out, and they sort it out. And I've never seen that. You look at Ferrari for two or three or four years now, they've struggled every year. The engine's not right. The aero package is not right. They're blaming the drivers. They're changing the drivers. All this stuff's happening. But you look at Mercedes and whatever the issue, they get it right within a week and they nail it. And you think, why are Ferrari and the likes of those teams not getting on it as well?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, the Mercedes is half a second faster than anything else on the track, which I would imagine will be the case for the majority of the 10 race season that we have. If it is 10, it might be extended. The interesting thing, I think, is the tightness of the midfield is really good to watch at the moment. And I was talking, my son's home at the moment, and we watched the race together, and we were both saying they're hardly showing the Mercedes on TV coverage because it's just leaps and bounds out in front. Nothing that interesting about that. But they are showing the tight battles in the midfield, which is really entertaining. Alex Albon needed a good race in Hungary because he was well behind his teammate and looks as though he was really struggling in the first two rounds. But in this race, he started 13th, finished in the top five, which was great. But also, he made some really good overtaking moves, which I think will have done wonders for his confidence. And watching the coverage of that was really exciting.
Yeah, and like you say, I think Albon, I've always been a fan of Albon. I think he's come into that car. He's had a lot of bad luck. He's been punted off a couple of times by Lewis. And I think he's a great driver. And I think he just needs a little bit of luck, a little bit more confidence. And we've seen it with many drivers before. They get their first win, their first podium, and the confidence starts going and they're off. I think he's leaps and bounds ahead of Gasly for me. However, having said that, you know, Gasly going back into the other team, he's doing great now. And, you know, he's blowing his teammate away. So it's just fascinating, isn't it? A lot of these drivers are very, very evenly matched. But it's purely, at this level, it's purely a game of mental and confidence. And, you know, if you're on the back foot, you're on the back foot.
Scott and Rick are the two soft compounds.
Let's talk about Ferrari. I mean, another nightmare weekend for them. This was the race they were intending on bringing upgrades to. They brought them a week early and then had the crash on lap one, so they couldn't really prove whether they worked. And this weekend, well, from looking at them on the timesheets and seeing them in the race, they haven't worked at the Hungara Ring either. I mean, these were upgrades that they thought would put them on a par with the likes of Red Bull, if not Mercedes, and they just haven't worked at all. And being lapped by the lead car halfway through the race has got to be the most demoralising thing. I just don't understand Ferrari. Their strategy calls have been pretty useless for the last 5 or 6 years. They make fundamental mistakes on the pit wall. Obviously, you've got two decent drivers in the team. But is it team management? What do you think is the problem in Ferrari? I mean, obviously, they've designed a car this year which is far too draggy, and they've got these massive engine problems.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about the management of the team before, haven't we? And I just think, for me, there's a lack of something at the top. I don't know what it is, but there just seems to be a lack of motivation within the team. Binotto, we've seen before, is very much like, you know, that it wasn't the greatest race, but, you know, and you can't be like that. You've got to start getting angry and go, come on, guys, what's wrong? Let's sort this out. Let's get to the top. He's too laid back and too blasé for me, and it's just not working. You know, they're a very passionate team. They've been around for absolutely years. One of the most successful teams in Formula One, if not the most successful. But, you know, and like you say, you've got two great drivers in the team. I feel really sorry for Seb. I don't know if you saw the interview that he did on Sky with Martin Brundle, but it was just fascinating where Brundle said, you know, I was in this same position once where I was doing very well and I got dumped from a big team. And then I was on the back foot. My career took a big dip and, you know, they were talking and Seb was kind of, he was really mature about it and really honest and just said, look, you know, these things happen. I'm upset about the way it was done, but, you know, here we are, you know, and let's see what the future brings. And he was very open to, I might go and race in another series. I might stay in Formula One. I'm seeing about my options and stuff. I've got a funny feeling he's going to end up at Aston Martin, which obviously is the Racing Point team are going to be Aston Martin next year. The more time goes on, the more I feel that it's going to be, you know, that move for him to replace, obviously, Perez, because he's not going to be replacing the team owner's son, is he? And I think Perez is probably going to end up replacing somebody like Grosjean at Haas. But I feel sorry for Seb and I feel sorry for Perez as well, because Perez, obviously, with his own financial backing, helped save Racing Point. And then Seb has kind of been dumped by Ferrari for no reason. I mean, in the race, they called him in, didn't they? Said, we're bringing you in, we're going to put softs on. And he said, do you not think mediums, you know? And he kind of made an in-car call, which turned out to be a brilliant call. They didn't do that with Leclerc and they did with Vettel, and, you know, Vettel finished very well. So he's got a racer's brain. He's got that mentality. He's a former world champion. He's got a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience. And I just feel that, you know, the Ferrari car is letting him down and it's making him look worse. But I think deep down, he's still got that hunger. And I think if you put him in, you know, the Aston Martin is what Racing Point is this year. That's a really good car this year. If they keep that up for next year and you put him in that Aston Martin, he could do some amazing things next year.
Yeah, he certainly could. Let's get some post-race stats then. Here's Nikki from At Lights Out. It's a fascinating blog you can follow all the time, but over the race weekends, he updates it live. Here are the post-race stats for the Hungarian Grand Prix.
Hamilton leads for the 150th time. Both Ferraris are lapped for the first time since 2008, and Raikkonen records his worst ever qualifying performance. Here are five of the top statistics from the 2020 Hungarian Grand Prix weekend. Lewis Hamilton won the Hungarian Grand Prix, taking his 86th career victory. It was his eighth win at the Hungaroring, equaling Michael Schumacher's record for the most wins at a single circuit. Hamilton became the first driver to take three consecutive wins at the Hungarian Grand Prix, and also became the first driver to lead 150 races during his career. With Hamilton winning from pole position, it was the first time that six consecutive races have been won by the pole sitter since 2006. Max Verstappen and Valtteri Bottas rounded out the podium positions, which made this race the first since the 2017 Singapore Grand Prix to feature a Mercedes 1-3 result, with a Red Bull driver finishing in between them. Both Verstappen and Bottas recorded their second podium finishes at the Hungaroring, becoming the 23rd and 24th drivers to have recorded multiple podium results at the track. Next up, Racing Point, and 2020 marked a complete turnaround in fortunes for the team at the Hungaroring. Before this year, they hadn't scored at the track since 2017. In fact, in their 29-year history since 1991 as Jordan, Midland, Spyker, Force India and Racing Point, the team had scored only 25 points at the track. In the 2020 race, Lance Stroll and Sergio Perez scored 18 points. Stroll's fourth place was the team's best result at the circuit, since Heinz-Harald Frentzen finished fourth for Jordan at the 1999 Hungarian Grand Prix. Ferrari's lacklustre season continued, with Sebastian Vettel finishing 6th and Charles Leclerc finishing 11th. It's the first time neither Ferrari driver has finished on the podium at the Hungarian Grand Prix since 2016. Furthermore, the 2020 Hungarian Grand Prix is the first time that both Ferrari drivers have been lapped in a race where both reached the chequered flag since the 2008 British Grand Prix. And finally, Kimi Raikkonen qualified last for the first time in his career. Raikkonen had previously qualified 20th at the 2003 Spanish Grand Prix, the 2003 Canadian Grand Prix and the 2014 British Grand Prix, but all of those were with mitigating factors. In addition to those occasions, Raikkonen has failed to set a lap time in qualifying 3 times and was also disqualified at the 2013 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. But the 2020 Hungarian Grand Prix is the first time that Raikkonen has been slowest of all the drivers in a qualifying session as a result of a lack of pace.
Thank you, Nicky. Don't forget, of course, you can catch all his blogs and his stats and facts. There's some amazing stuff. It's at Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. And he updates all the stuff, as Rick said earlier, during the race weekends. And there's some amazing stats and facts. Just listening to some of those as well, we're literally watching Lewis Hamilton break records after records after records. There's a lot of subtle records that he's breaking, you know, like the most races won in a Grand Prix year or, you know, total number of whatevers. It's interesting that he's now 5 victories away from the most wins ever as well. And I think, you know, we've said this before about Hamilton. We are watching greatness in front of our eyes. We don't appreciate it, I don't think, at the moment. But, you know, in 10, 15 years' time, we'll look back and go, he was an incredible driver, wasn't he, Hamilton?
The records, like you say, I mean, it's almost like, are we going to have a record go now for the most use of the drinks bottle during a race type thing? I mean, it's like they're digging them out of nowhere. So Hamilton, yeah, looking dominant, and the displays he's putting in each race, even though he had a few issues in the first, each race he's putting these displays in that are just monumental. It's like, you know, he's getting older now, but he's improving with age, and the maturity that he brings and the experience obviously is second to none. And I can't see anyone getting in his way of winning the championship again this year.
Yeah, and it feels like as he gets older, he's freeing up brain space to do other stuff. So he can drive the car so kind of automatically now, so well, so brilliantly automatically, that he's freeing up his brain to think about other things like strategy. And it's just incredible to watch all that sort of stuff unfold, really.
And the thing with Bottas as well, you know, at the start, we thought he could be a serious challenger for this year's world championship. And the Hungarian race confirmed to me again that he's not going to be. And the reason for that is, once again, you know what I think about Bottas and his overtaking during races. But, you know, another driver with the pace of that car should have been able to overtake Verstappen for second and a second step on the podium. Once again, he got close, but not close enough. He didn't do any lunging down the inside or the outside of the track. He didn't do any sort of flary moves that could have enabled him to overtake Max Verstappen. Again, I just came away from it thinking, you know what? He's just never going to do it. I think Rosberg found a way to beat Hamilton, which was hate him. You've got to hate this person, and you've got to really dive down into the darkest places in your soul to find a way of beating him mentally before you can do it on the track. And I saw signs of that last season with Bottas and maybe at the start of this season. But now I'm like, nah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, he's too much of a nice guy, isn't he? I think you do have career number two drivers, don't you, that are very, very nice guys. They're brilliant drivers, but they're not megastar drivers. We spoke about this before on the podcast. You know, the person that springs to mind is someone like David Coulthard or, you know, Barrichello, someone like that. They're very, very good drivers, but there's just something lacking. And I think it's that selfish, I'm out for myself, I'm going to be a world champion. And, you know, and you look at people like Senna had it, Hamilton's got it, Schumacher's got it. You know, there's a lot of drivers that have got that selfish, I'm out for number one streak. And you have to have that to be particularly a multiple time world champion.
Nightmare race for Alpha. I've been told it's Alpha Tauri. I used to say Alpha Chori because I thought the Chori bit stood for Taurus, which you pronounce as Chori. But apparently I've been told off. Kyle Mansell, who listens to the podcast, sent me a text message in a week saying, oh, by the way, it's Tauri. I was like, oh, all right, wind your neck in. So anyway, hello, Kyle. So yeah, Alpha Tauri had a nightmare. Gasly didn't get out in free practice one at all with issues. And then, of course, he retired during the race on Sunday with engine issues and gearbox problems. And you think with the Honda engine, which is the same as they've got in the main Red Bull car, they'd be doing a little bit better than they are at the moment.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because there's a real mid-team battle going on, like you said before, with, you know, there's such closeness this year between those teams, but it really is track dependent. Depending on which track we go to, whether it's a fast or a slow track, and, you know, fast corners, slow corners, it really depends on the type of track to see who does well and who doesn't do well. A lot of teams are surprising us this year, and a lot of teams are surprising us because they're doing so badly. Nice to see Williams, you know, getting up there a little bit and qualifying around the 13-14 mark as well. That's really nice to see. And like you say, lots of pronunciation changes this year because you've got the AlphaTauri, and then we've had this discussion on Texas, and we started off calling him Charles Leclerc because that's how he said it on the Netflix documentary. I've since seen a video where he says, well, you can call me Charles Leclerc or Charles Leclerc, I don't mind. And he said, but the Monegasque way of saying it is Charles Leclerc. So he said, you know, say what you want, but that's the fact. So I think it's probably Charles Leclerc is the official way of saying it, isn't it? But I get confused.
The funny thing for me is I was trying to get my missus into Formula One for years. And she finally sat down a couple of races ago and watched the opening race of the season with me. And you know, on the side of the screen, they just have the three letters to for each driver. She was working her way down, trying to guess the surnames of the drivers. And she got the obvious ones. You know, she got Verstappen and she got, oh, that's Vettel, V-E-T, Vettel. And it came to Norris, which is N-O-R. And she went, Norberg. So now in our house, we just call him Norberg. And that brings us on to a great point, which is to talk about McLaren. What one lovely thing that they picked up on after the race, which is like going back to the old days of when you were in a karting team and used to finish the race and the drivers would help pack up. And that's exactly what Norris did. He was under the car, taking it apart, helping the lads in the garage get ready to ship everything back to Britain for the British Grand Prix. I just thought that was lovely. And it was a fairly frustrating race for McLaren. Sainz in the points and then got another point because of a Haas demotion after the race. But Norris, sadly, not in the points this week. And he's now fourth in the Drivers' Championship.
Yeah, I saw that clip as well on Twitter. I saw another one, actually, that had a picture of him doing that, like, you know, helping him with the car. And then next to that was Max Verstappen and Ricciardo going home to Monaco on a private jet. And they said, you know, make of this what you will between these two pictures. And it's just interesting. But like you say, he's got a great mentality, Lando. He's a real team player, got a great personality. I think him and Ricciardo are just going to fit in McLaren so well together. I think that, you know, we've seen them before being really mischievous in press conferences. And I just think those two as a duo will be great. It's really nice to see the McLaren team. I mean, they're a solid third or fourth, aren't they? The best car out there. And it's so nice to see that kind of turnaround. Obviously, next year, they've got the Mercedes engine as well. So that's going to, you know, hopefully bring them up. As I can easily see McLaren, you know, being a top two or three team next year with the Mercedes engine. And it's nice to see. Hopefully Williams will get out there as well. And, you know, it's nice to see the resurgence of some of these amazing big teams, isn't it?
Yeah, and let's sort of round off by talking a bit more about what they're calling Tracing Point. What's your view on the fact that they've copied last year's Mercedes car? I mean, clearly they have. Whether they've got actual fundamental design copies from someone in the Mercedes team is something a bit different. the other teams think they might have. But they say, no, we just took lots of photos, made lots of studies and calculations based on the photographic evidence, and we've gone off and copied the best team on the grid. Why didn't you to the other teams?
It is a funny one, isn't it? Because exactly that. I mean, you can take lots of pictures. You can, if you've got very clever engineers that can look at something and go, oh, I see what they've done with that. You know, you can get an engineer in this game that will look at wires and go, oh, he's wired that into that, which makes that happen. You know, it's the same sort of thing, isn't it? An engineer will see a part on a car and go, right, they're doing that with that, which must cause this effect, which is then making that work better. So an engineering brain can work all that out. But like you say, it does seem like a coincidence that they've gone from quite far down to all of a sudden being right high up. It's great to see that, you know, next year they're going to be Aston Martin, and I'm a huge fan of the Aston Martin cars. And I think it's going to be great to have them in Formula One. I think, you know, I'm assuming there'll be green cars. I think they'll look great. But it will be nice to have a mark like that on the grid as well. And if they're high up, brilliant. And if they've got a driver like, you know, Vettel with the team next year, that could be amazing as well. But yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? It's, I mean, they're putting in protests. Renault have protested quite a few times already, haven't they? Twice at least. And in my mind, if there's something wrong, the FIA are going to find it and they're going to say, no, hang on, you have copied that, and, you know, we need proof of design or whatever. And they haven't yet. So it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you would assume if they had just copied the design, they would be found out by now.
You mentioned Renault. We haven't really discussed them on the podcast this week, but Renault is a team that really frustrates me at the moment. You think at the start of each weekend, this will be the race weekend where they make improvements. This will be the one where Ricciardo has one of his famous overtaking moves. And it just seems to never really happen. And it's been dragging on for over a year and a half now. And you're kind of like, oh, come on. You know, each year I hope for bigger and better things for that team. And they don't seem to be making the strides that others around them are doing.
Yeah. And again, you know, big manufacturer behind them, a lot of money behind them, big team behind them, former world champions, you know, fairly recently in the last 15 years or so. They've got Alonso coming back to the team next year. Is that going to give them a resurgence? They're going to go one way or the other. They're either going to, you know, become another McLaren and just frustrate Alonso and he'll do another couple of years and then quit again, or they will be right at the top and Alonso will outdrive the car and they'll be an amazing team. But you're right, they've got a lot of resources, but very much like Ferrari. A lot of people, a lot of resources, a lot of money. What's going on? Why is it not working?
Well, we'll see in a couple of weeks' time as we head for two rounds at Silverstone, one of my favourite tracks. From a spectating point of view, I think it's just fantastic. One of the fastest tracks of the season as well. Some really good overtaking options on that circuit. We've got the British Grand Prix and then the 70th anniversary Grand Prix the weekend after. Are you a fan of these back-to-back races at the same track? I quite liked it.
Yeah, the first two were great because they were so different. I think the good news about two British Grand Prix two weekends apart is, come on, it's England. We're bound to have rain, at least on one of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that should spice one of the races up. Knowing Britain, we'll probably have an amazing, beautiful, sunny race with like 80 degrees and everybody, you know, in T-shirts and it being amazingly warm. And then the next weekend, it will be thunderstorms and loads of rain and stuff. So, let's hope that does happen because, you know, then you've got two very different races at one racetrack. But you're right, you know, Silverstone's an amazing track. I've raced there myself. It's an exciting Grand Prix. It's a very fast race, like you say. I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully, you know, so far these back-to-back races have proved that they're quite a good idea. So let's see if it happens again with the British Grand Prix.
Okay, well, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with our preview of that British Grand Prix. Until then, take care.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.